Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
From the land of Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 10th day of June 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets, in particular this morning's USDA World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimate Report. Mike Zuzalo will be here of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. And then if you can stay with us for the whole of the hour today, otherwise online at willag.org, willag.org. You'll hear Commodity Week. Our panelists this week include Merrill Crowley, Dell Durkles, Elaine Cobb, and Ed Ussett. He's from Minnesota, the University of. And it all happens right here on this Friday edition of the agricultural programming that comes to you from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, on this Friday, the 10th day of June, USDA report day, futures reacted today in the July contract for the corn pit down 3.5 cents at $4.23, September at 4.27.5, three lower, December down 2.75 at $4.30.75, and the March corn at 4.35.75, 2.5 lower, July of next year down 2.75 at $4.40.5, July soybeans $11.78.25 up 2.25, August 11.77.75, 5.75 higher, September at 11.68.5 up 8.75, and November beans a dime higher, $11.62.75, January at 11.58.75 on their settlement price up 10.5 cents. Bean oil futures at 32.76, 27 cents lower. July bean meal at $414 even, up 50 cents. Soft red winter wheat down 15.25 at 495 for the day. September at 506.5 down 15 as well. The hard red July at 468.5, 15.75 cents lower. Live cattle futures at 122, 22.5, 97.5 cents lower in the June. August at 117, 52.5, $1.32.5 lower. Feeder cattle, the August contract down $2.02.5 at $145.27.5 per 100 pounds in September. At 144, 2.5 down $1.45. June lean hogs, $82.32.5 down 35 cents. July at 85, 72.5, 30 cents lower for the day. You're listening to the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. We'll post all of our agricultural programming on that website not long after it airs on our radio stations.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support of the Friends of WILL and Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or
at this
on
hour,
the internet
oil for the
at
day
batescom.net.
The July contract at $49 and a nickel, that's $1.51 lower. Ethanol futures at $1.65.7, a penny and 9 cents lower. Gasoline on the RBOB, the wholesale price, July contract, $1.55.6, down 6.1 cents. And heating oil, 3.5 cents lower at $1.51.5. That's diesel fuel. Natural gas at $2.56.6 per gallon, down 5.1 cents for the day. The Dow Jones Industrial Average at 17,826, down 147 points. The U.S. dollar at 94.575, currently up 0.618. And the gold futures at $1,275.60, $5.40 higher on the afternoon. Speaking of higher, it's getting warmer outside and will continue to do so. A clear sky this evening, a low of just 70 degrees, a wind out of the southwest at 10 to 15, and then tomorrow sunny skies. Near record high temperatures tomorrow, a high of 96 degrees, winds out of the west-southwest at 10 to 15. Saturday night, partly cloudy, a stray shower or thunderstorm is possible, a low of 72. Sunday, partly cloudy skies, a stray shower or thunderstorm, high of 93. Monday, sunshine and then clouds. A stray shower again, 95 degrees. Monday evening, generally fair, low of 71. And on Tuesday, scattered thunderstorms, 80% chance of rainfall, about 1600s predicted. On Wednesday, 60%, 1600s predicted. Then Wednesday night, 60%, 2800s. Thursday, 60%, 4200s of a percent. And another 3900s on Thursday evening.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. On this USDA report day, joined now by Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Good afternoon to you, Mike. Thanks so much for being with us.
Good afternoon, and thanks for having me, Todd.
Well, let's take a look at some of these numbers, and I guess I'll take us through both the old and the new crop WASDE figures, the quick numbers, and we see that as we take a look at those, there have been some changes that took place. Old crop corn down 95 million bushels on the carryout, now at 1.708 billion. Soybeans at 370 million, down, 30 million bushels. Wheat up 2 million this year for 980. Next year's crop, the new crop corn, down 145 million from the May estimate, now at just right at 2 billion bushels for the carryout for corn. Soybeans at 260 million, 45 million lower, and the wheat down 29 at 1.0. 5 billion bushels for their carryover. What do you think of the numbers when they came out at 11 o'clock, and how did the trade react?
I think the biggest thing I was looking at, and what I was talking with clients with and emailing them after the report in the flash update that I gave them, was, is the soybean bull being fed by today's numbers? And I don't think it was, Todd, but I think it was maintained. And what I mean by that is this 9-week run higher is the best we've had in 43 years for beans. And November beans now are into June 2014 levels. So we've essentially erased all of the losses and all of the lower price levels from 2015. And as you know, in the 2014 marketing year, we came in at, you know, a 191 million bushel carryover. So the trade was, I think, geared up for this low of a number, this 260 million new crop number for ending stocks in the United States. But I don't think we really fed the bull because they had been factoring this in. What I think kept the beans stronger into the close is, as bearish and as negative as the trade was last year on weather, it is the other side of the coin this year based upon colleagues and talking conversations and talking to people that are related to the fund community. They just aren't going to sell out because they believe so earnestly in La Nina, and therefore they don't believe these models are correct that are going to bring us a wide-ranging rain next week. And they're taking kind of the Harry Truman stance, show me, I'm from Missouri, I want to see the rain before I really liquidate these positions. And I think going into this weekend with the hot, hot temperatures upon us, that's really what it was all about after these numbers came out. So hopefully answering both questions, I didn't think the bull got fed in the soybeans. The bear got very well fed in the harvest, or excuse me, in the wheat, especially with harvest upon us, with the ending stocks numbers going above the highest trade guesses. And I think this is where the corn was kind of like taffy. It was pulled in between the two.
And then if we take a look at what USDA says, the season's average cash price, it might be important to put some of this in perspective, at least as it relates to what USDA is thinking still for the current marketing year for soybeans. They're at $9.05 on the midpoint. They did raise the number range from 835 to 985 for new crop. To $8.75 to $10.25, still well below where current trade is for new crop on the soybeans. On corn, the old range, old crop range is $3.60 to $3.80, so the midpoint right there at $3.70. For new crop, it was $3.05 to $3.65. They bumped that up by about 15 cents on both ends, now $3.20 to $3.80. These numbers also well below what cash prices are at the moment for old crop or new crop corn. What do you think of the possibilities?
Yeah, I think it's certainly more supportive for the corn. I think the charts, the technicals, and the cash market are more supportive for the corn because I think they're kind of related. Unlike the soybeans, the corn, and partially because of the wheat, has not had this parabolic near vertical move up. And so it's not in the business of shocking demand right now and cutting the legs out from underneath demand like the soy is, especially in the meal market like we've talked about before. So that bodes better for corn demand going up as the Brazilian crop shrinks And as the Argentina livestock market suffers with the high prices from their next door neighbor. One thing I will say about the 45-cent increase in the soybeans for new crop when they rose, when like you said, they increased both sides. At 260 carryover, that makes sense. But I would almost argue at this stage of the game, if we have higher new crop acres, we don't have a drought, and so we maintain that 46.5 bushel national average yield. And at these elevated levels, I think we could cut some demand out. I wonder if this 260 number may not be close to the lowest carryover number we're going to see when it's all said and done. They may come in and get down to around 250 maybe next month if they don't want to change acres again. But I'm wondering if it's not wise to start looking at this number as one of the lower numbers, because if we see a 55 million bushel increase in production because of acres, if we see a 55 million bushel decrease in total demand because of this parabolic move higher and livestock weights do go down, then you're talking about 375 on the carryover, 370 instead of 260. I think it's worth noting that the day of the report so we can kind of put a marker down.
How'd USDA to come to all these numbers? What are the things that changed, at least in your mind, that made the biggest differences?
I think they're setting us up for June stocks report. You know, when you cut 9% off of old crop beans and you do it with only maybe 60 days worth of the marketing year left, the only thing I can think from a methodological standpoint is, okay, we need to justify the June stocks report by cutting the old crop carryover down. The corn carryover from the old crop, I think it was a 5% cut. That's tolerable, but a 9% cut this late in the marketing year for 15-16 doesn't make a lot of sense to me unless you're going to take the grain stocks down. So if that's correct, then you should have a stronger bull spread continue, and you should have the stronger basis. And I think that, you know, bodes well for the corn and beans both, you know, until we see this rain. And I think this rain coming up in the next 10 days is a really make or break above normal crop yielding rain that keeps the supply levels comfortable. Or if we miss it, we're going to, and this is coming straight from producers all around the country, we're going to have some real issues going into the end of June, 1st of July.
And so you heard me read the forecast for here. Some of our radio listeners won't have heard those numbers, but fairly good-sized rainfalls events over the 4 or 5 days of next week. However, meteorologists are mixed about how widespread this is, I guess, whether it will come to fruition. What are you hearing from them?
No, you're exactly right. I think that, you know, my private consultant that just did a weather update for me this week said this looks a lot like 83 to him, that it could be good rains early on, but then they get harder and harder to come by. And I think there's others in the trade that are thinking the same thing. And so these rains now really matter a lot in case we do have a more strengthening La Nina come in July, August. And so I think this is where, you know, the hedging 101 comes into play, where you just sell and defend for 30 and defend for 30 days, especially with the soybeans, with new crop beans, you know, back to June of 2014 price levels. And when 60 days ago, the producer was looking at the abyss as far as not even being able to meet cost of production, this is where it's, to me, pretty simple to come in, sell some beans. You've got the crop insurance. Sell what makes you feel comfortable. You've got the opportunity to buy some, you know, $12.60 or $13 November bean calls. Do the same thing on the corn. You could even tighten that up to September $4.50 corn calls if you wanted to, or tighten it up to September bean calls if you wanted to, because I don't think you're going to need these bean calls in 30 days if we get these kind of rains, and you're going to more than offset, you know, the loss in the calls with a much better cash price. So it seems to me we need to just get back to basics, and then this fall when we go to the banker, we can say, yeah, we spent this money on reownership, but look how bright 2017 looks because the market didn't get the rains and I didn't have the yields. Look how high the prices may be, and I've got this harvest price and crop insurance that may really start to pay off this year. So a lot of things out there I think we can use at these prices.
Thanks so much, Mike.
My pleasure. Have a great weekend, sir.
You too. Mike Zuzulo is with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. In today's agricultural news, staffers for members of the Senate Agriculture Committee are continuing negotiations on reaching a compromise for the national GMO labeling law. This week, that staff members for the committee are working on reaching an agreement on behalf of Republican Chairman Pat Roberts and committee's ranking Democrat Debbie Stabenow. Less than 2 weeks of working days remain for Congress to pass a compromise that would supersede the Vermont mandatory GMO labeling law, taking effect July the 1st. The Coalition for Safe, Affordable Food Supply also noted that a New York state law continues to advance and that the law was an indication of the danger of more states considering state laws with differences, potentially causing chaos in the marketplace. Well, General Mills this week announced a strategic sourcing partnership with the largest organic cooperative in the United States. The partnership with Wisconsin-based Organic Valley will help about 20 dairy farms add around 3,000 acres to organic dairy production. The program will assist General Mills to double the organic acreage from which it sources ingredients by 2019. Since 2009, General Mills has increased the organic acreage it supports by 120%. Well, Egypt has backtracked on a government pledge to apply international standards on the fungus ergot found in wheat imports, recently rejecting two more shipments. Last time around, suppliers called the zero-tolerance ergot standards by Egypt impossible to meet. Traders had boycotted tenders by Egypt to purchase wheat after the first round of rejections. And finally today, researchers from four universities are teaming up with dairy farms across the Northeast and Mid-Atlantic to study the impact of manure management practices on antibiotic resistance. The $1 million project, funded by the USDA's National Institute of Food and Agriculture, will evaluate antibiotic-resistant bugs in dairy cow manure, how they survive treatment systems, and whether any residuals end up on farm fields. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. Now, up next, the Environmental Protection Agency needs to increase its 2017 renewable fuels proposal for conventional biofuel volumes to the statutory level. Otherwise, Midwest state industry officials told the agency at a Missouri field hearing yesterday the EPA would be selling farmers short. Nebraska governor and vice chair of the Governor's Biofuels Coalition, Pete Ricketts, says not only can farmers and ethanol makers supply enough ethanol and biodiesel, but near record fuel demand forecasted for next year and USDA's new grants to add blender pumps leaves the EPA with no excuse but to boost the RFS to the level Congress intended.
These factors provide a clear pathway to meeting the statutory 15 billion gallon requirements for the conventional renewable fuel in 2017. And again, just as someone who deals with our farmers and biodiesel or biofuel industry, I am very confident in their ability to meet the requirements in the future. We have the most productive, innovative farmers and ranchers in the world.
That's a point that the director of agriculture for Missouri, Richard Fortas, himself a corn, soybean, and cattle farmer, picked up on.
We do it better than anybody in the world. We have increased yields in corn and soybeans. We have the highest quality hogs and cattle and turkeys and chickens in the globe. We need to continue to provide markets for that. And the RFS is a critical tool in supplying markets, making markets available for corn and soybean farmers for their corn and their soybeans.
Fortas urged the EPA not to sell farmers short, even in bad times.
But I know when I was here last year, we had come off a pretty difficult 2012. Corn production in the Midwest was pretty short, but we hit the levels.
The EPA is proposing refineries blend 14.8 billion gallons of conventional biofuels next year. That's 200 million gallons below the statutory target Congress envisioned. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. Now on this hot day, something completely different and a place that you might want to go explore. You know, back in 1904, there was a grain elevator built in the town of Atlanta, Illinois, that is. It was closed back in the mid-1970s, and then in the early 90s, a few of the townsfolks there decided to save that aging building, and now it is on the Registry of Historical Places in the United States. Let's take a quick tour of the J.H. Hawes Grain Elevator and Museum with Marge and James Coleman.
The engine came from the Eminence Grain and Coal Company, which is about 3.5-4 miles out of town. And it was restored by Dean May. And he put it back in really wonderful condition. And that's how it got here. Volunteer work has gone in. The bricks in the engine building were all cleaned by volunteers in the cold old days. And we've had a lot of people volunteer their help on laying bricks and carrying mortar and fixing windows, and we have tried to keep it as historically as possible.
Well, I guess we might say it's just we enjoy showing people how it used to be done. I can't say primitive way, but somewhere between primitive and modern day, it was done through houses like this. Well, they stopped on the scale platform with the load originally, and then after they weighed and cleared the scale house, they'd drive on up in here and stop on the dump logs, and they'd trip it and run the load down in the pit. End of the leg, up in the bend.
The scales came from out in the country. And I was just riding my bike in the morning downtown, and there were four people walking around, and I had a feeling they had been from here, and I stopped and visited with them. To make a long story short, we came over in the afternoon, and the scales in the scale house was from a farm out in the country, and they didn't know their dad very well because their parents had divorced. And when they looked down in the scales, there was their dad's name with grain that he had brought to that farmer, and he kept all the list of grain and the weights. And I soon saw tears in their eyes. The city hall and the library, when they're open, you can always get someone there to call one of us who have a key to open it and show you around. It's always open during June, July, and August on Sunday afternoons from 1 to 3. But if anybody comes through, most people in town know who to call and get the elevator open. And I ride my bike around a lot, and I've gone home and gotten the key many a time, brought people down here, and I've had a wonderful time showing the elevator.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Back with the weather in just 2 minutes.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois. Since 1916, Farm Credit Illinois has been helping farm families succeed, providing farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing. Farm Credit Illinois joins in celebrating the rich history of Illinois agriculture.
It's National Black Cow Day. Credit for the treat often goes to Frank Wisner of Cripple Creek, Colorado, who in 1893 was inspired to float a scoop of vanilla ice cream on top of his glass of root beer after glimpsing the illumination of snow on top of Cow Mountain outside his home. By the way, the drink is also known as a brown cow. On this day in agricultural history in 1869, frozen food was shipped long distance for the first time. Frozen Texas beef was shipped by steamship to New Orleans. Frozen by refrigeration equipment invented by John Gorey. The meat was eventually served in hospitals, hotels, and restaurants. Success in the frozen beef market prompted food manufacturers to develop freezing methods of other types, culminating in Clarence Birdseye's flash freezing system that ultimately hit grocery cases in 1934. In 1952, Mylar was registered as a DuPont trademark. Mylar is a very strong polyester film that has gradually replaced cellophane. DuPont touted the polyester film's strength, heat resistance, and insulating properties. It is used as a food wrap in addition to many other non-food uses. And in 1985, in the most embarrassing moment category, Coca-Cola officials announced it was bringing back the old formula Coke to replace the new Coke nobody wanted. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Friday afternoon. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Eric Snodgrass from Agrible joins us now to discuss the weather forecast. Eric, looks like we're going to have some heat here today and maybe for several days. What do you see in the forecast?
Yeah, so we've been keeping a close eye on the position of the jet stream over the last couple of weeks because we were really seeing it build into a nice ridge in the center part of the country. And when it does that, that warm, you know, moist southerly flow from the Gulf of Mexico and Mexico and Texas really streams northward, and it's going to crank temperatures like it already is doing today up into the 90s for most of the Corn Belt, maybe even some triple-digit heat in there tomorrow. You know, the last time we saw a lot of 90-degree weather in July was several years ago, back in 2012. Not saying that this is a 2012 summer, but it's been a few years since we've had a warm June, I should say June. And so that ridge sticks around, actually. We see it very kind of semi-permanently, kind of persistently through the end of the month. With that comes your chance of, you know, your afternoon pop-up thunderstorm. So some people are going to get lucky and get a lot of rain on some of their fields, while others are going to miss out on it. But there is some organized precipitation coming in the short term. We do have a system that's going to be building in the Rockies, kind of getting out to the Great Plains on Monday, pushes across the Corn Belt midweek. Chance for some severe weather, but definitely a chance for some clouds and precipitation. That's going to try to knock temperatures back, but it's not going to be able to do too much because really through about June 16 or 17, we're going to see these well above average temperatures, you know, for a large part of the Corn Belt.
Anything else that we need to watch, for instance, in the southern hemisphere?
What we've got right now is a big dome of high pressure that's moving to the north. So remember, their directions are kind of the way the weather systems move are a little bit opposite of ours. So moving to the north is bringing cooler air into southern Brazil. And as that happens, we're expecting overnight lows over the next few days to dip below freezing. And so this is putting some pressure on the safrinha crop, putting some pressure on the harvest activity. And a lot of people like to think about this in the context of La Nina. You know, is La Nina causing this? And so let's just talk about that briefly as we kind of wrap up here. First of all, the current El Nino has crashed. We're actually seeing cool sea surface temperature anomalies across the central part of the Pacific, and that indicates La Nina is already settling in. Is there a strong statistical relationship between our summer and our our yields with La Nina here in the United States? Really, there isn't. We need to look at some other bigger players, in my opinion, other than La Nina, and here they are. Right now, in the central North Pacific and in the north central Atlantic, there are two kind of cooler zones of sea surface temperatures. And when those areas get cool, it kind of forces the jet stream to kind of get and stay kind of put into a ridge across the central part of the United States. And that ridge typically means warmth. So I've looked out long range. I've looked out with several different models. And I'll tell you, there's a higher probability than average that we have a warm July, and a much higher probability than average, higher than average, that we're going to have a warm August and September. You know, the European model runs out actually 45 days. It's actually forecasting a little bit warmer than average July. And the GFS model, our own model here in the U.S., is forecasting that as well. Just a word of caution, we're not talking about 2012 heat, and we're certainly not talking about 2012 dryness. But corn, beans love the cool July, And I'm thinking right now that we're going to have an average to above average July in terms of temperatures.
Okay, thanks so much, Eric. We appreciate your insight. All right, that is Eric Snodgrass. He is with Agrible. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Commodity Week is up next.